is the show that fights to close that gap between rhetoric and reality. Now, follow my instructions closely. Write down our call-in number. You are going to need it. 801-254-5855. As Thomas Jefferson before me, I have sworn an eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the minds of men. So, while I may not agree with what you say when you call in, I will always fight for your right to say it. Today is May 2nd, 2012. How are you guys? The weather is nice. Hope you guys are doing okay out there. I had a fun show yesterday. And today, I'm mixing it up a little bit. You know, the name of this show is Mental Self-Defense. People who are, you know, fans of this show or know anything about me, you know, this concept is kind of a merger. The concept of this show is a merger between two things, well, three things that I'm kind of passionate about. One, obviously, kind of mental stuff, like hypnosis. I'm a professional hypnotist, all that kind of stuff. Politics, clearly. I'm libertarian. I believe in the idea of liberty and freedom and constitutional government. But then one of the things that's been a passion of mine for a very, very long time, I mean a long time, since I was four, is self-defense, but more specifically wrestling and more specifically grappling. And I started when I was four, and my mom put me in the peewees. I don't really know why she did that, but she did that, and I'm glad she did. And it's been something that's been really a wonderful thing for me. It's been a real journey, you know. Like, I had some challenges when I was young with illnesses, and it kind of put me out of, I think, high level competition. I don't know. Maybe that's the excuse I make for myself, but at the same time, it allowed me to really get to know some pretty amazing people, and I'm thrilled because we have some pretty cool guests in today. A guy who's been on the show before. He's a good friend of mine. I've trained with him in the past, and I consider myself lucky because this guy is about as top of the food chain as you get. And I'm thrilled because he's here in Utah. Actually, when I moved here back in 2009, a mutual friend was like, "Oh, you got to meet Brandon. You guys are totally going to hit it off." And so we started hanging out, and the guy, he's a real nice guy. You're going to listen to him on the radio here, and he's real humble and he's real sweet and stuff. But the guy is like, he's a beast. I don't know, really, until you have this guy tossing you around in wrestling practice, you won't get it because you'll hear him on the radio. He's laughing because he knows I'm right. You'll hear him on the radio. He's a real nice guy, but this guy is top of the food chain. And what I mean by that, I mean his wrestling background is just out of this world. Has a background in Greco-Roman wrestling. Did it at BYU. I think you were an All-American, right? What's your accolades in just the Greco-Roman? I mean, obviously you went to BYU for it.
BYU was actually collegiate wrestling, and then I went on and wrestled the Olympic style, which is Greco-Roman wrestling, at the Olympic Center. Was All-American there four times, and then I also was a Pan-American silver medalist. So,
and that's like enough for most people. Most people are like, okay, yeah, I'm pretty much the top of the food chain. And then you're like, no, I need to get a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu on top of that, right?
Yep, got my black belt back in 2008. So,
and then you're just like a competition machine. So for a long time, you were you've been involved with FILA and their grappling games, right? So you were, now you're the heavyweight gold medalist for the FILA World Grappling Games. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm the current world champion for the heavyweight division in the FILA grappling. So
okay, but you had two rounds, right, where you went and you almost made it, like you were. But you were the silver medalist, I think, twice.
Yeah,
is that
twice.
Right?
Yeah, I was second twice in 2008, 2009, and then 2011. Last year, I won the world championship. So
you clearly have put in the time. You've clearly done the training. You know, the physical side of it, obviously. But I don't think people really think about the mental side of the game. I mean, one of my biggest mentors, a guy that I revere, Billy Robinson, you know, we just worked on his book, and he insisted on calling it physical chess, which I think really shows the mental side of this game. And so you've been kind of at the top of this for decades. I mean, in each of these respective fields. But something happened for you, right? Like, you realized that you needed to maybe take things up a notch. And that brings us to our second guest. And I'm sorry you guys got to share a mic, so it's going to have to go back and forth. But this is a gentleman who you brought into your life and into your game to help you with your mental game. His name is Joey Johnson. Let's bring him in. And hi, Joey. How are you?
Good, Jake. How you doing?
Doing good. So, Joey, I'll start with you because Brandon's been on the show before, so we'll try to go back and forth. Obviously, sharing the mic, I know it might not be the smoothest transition, but we'll do our best. So, Joey, your game is actually different, right? I mean, I'll tell you, I'm glad there's wrestling because I am awful at every other sport. I really am. I just am not good. At wrestling, I can kind of get it. I understand the idea, but you come from tennis, for example, right?
That's my background, yeah.
That's your background. So what did you do in your respective sport? I mean, how did you transition from doing your sport and loving it and having a passion for it and doing it well, I'm sure, but then to transition into this role? I mean, you've written this book, Worthy to Win, and Brandon and you have worked together, and I know Brandon, you know, he's so passionate. I mean, he really lives the wrestling, and he credits you with helping him being a part of his team to take him to the gold medal there at FILA. I mean, what is the importance of this concept of yours, this worthy to win concept?
Well,
and what's your background? You know, whatever. Just let's open it up and talk to you
first,
about you.
I'll start by saying that, you know, working with Brandon has over the years, because we've been in contact for quite a while, has been a great process. I mean, I think you've seen any person that's really dedicated to becoming the best in anything. He is submerged in it, and he's full tilt, kind of person who just says, I'm going to figure this out and create everything I need to become a champion.
Yeah, I mean, sacrifice is sometimes what you call that, right? Like putting it above everything else, no matter how hard it could be.
Absolutely. You know, and I've worked with a lot of athletes, tons of them over the years, and when you see the ones that excel the most, they're willing. They have a willingness to be really honest with themselves, to look at themselves from different angles. Brandon certainly exudes that, and he's because at the end of the day, he just wants to get it done. He's that kind of person, and I think anytime you run into someone at that caliber, that's what's behind it. You know, that they're willing to take a look at themselves from every different avenue. And in sports, it's, you know, technically, physically, you know, the things they're doing in their technical work, their physical routines, their nutrition, their, you know, and then of course their mindset, the way they're processing all this information. And that's where I, you know, that's my specialty, is helping them orchestrate that inner voice inside their mind that is constantly clicking away in the background.
Yeah, this got me really excited because, you know, I'm a professional hypnotist when I'm not doing this. And so that concept is very real to me, you know, and I know that, like, in Colorado Springs, they do a lot of guided visualizations and things like that. I remember I did a training camp with Randy Couture a number of years ago, and he had us all lay down on the map and on the mat and do, you know, he was guiding us through all this kind of stuff. And it's really powerful. But I actually, for me, and again, this could be a Rorschach type of thing where I'm putting my own meaning on it, but I really like this concept, worthy to win. Because sometimes we're our own worst enemy, right? I mean, is that kind of where you're coming from? This is to say that it's okay to be awesome. It's okay to win. You're worthy of doing that. I mean, what is the real impetus behind that?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it is a fundamental question. I think that anyone who's poised to have a breakthrough has to answer, and they have to be living those steps or those principles. But just to give you a little background, it started, you know, when I was a kid. I mean, I grew up in very close Minnesota, which is a very unlikely place for a tennis player to come from. As a kid, we were competitive skiers in my family, but, you know, at a certain point, I was going through, parents had split up, and I was a young kid and had really, for whatever reason, had found sports as a place to find, you know, a bit of an understanding of who I was. It was my identity, you know, and I used to go over to this old wall behind where we lived at this old university. It's kind of a funny story, but and that's where I learned how to play tennis. And it was
just hitting the ball against the wall.
Just hitting against this old wall, and I would go over there, and I knew I got a good workout when the balls were black because they would dump coal there in the winter. So there'd be, it was just this grimy little corner, but you know, on that wall, I learned how to, you know, fundamentally just kind of bang away at the craft, you know, And from there, I at one point I remember thinking, "Gosh, I'm pretty good at this, you know, and I want to excel at this." And so as I was developing this skill, which anyone in a skill related, you know, performance based, you know, field or career can relate to, they have to connect with that wall, and this identity starts to develop. Who am I? You know what? You know, and how does this connect with what I'm doing? And that relationship, which really deals a lot with self-awareness and helping people get to know themselves, and that they believe at the end of the day that they're capable. You know, they are worthy. They deserve it.
But there's a difference, right, between somebody really knowing that and just kind of going through the motions and saying it. Oh, I'm worthy, like affirmations or something.
Absolutely.
There's a difference in knowledge, knowing it, versus just kind of faking it till you make it type of thing.
Yeah, from my perspective, that is the essential, that they're doing it, you know, that they're putting the pieces together. I mean, at the end of the day, if you, you know, you want to become a world champion grappler, you've got to understand technically what needs to happen in all aspects of becoming just a master at that sport, you know, and it's the same with anything. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, the self-talk and the, you know, the visualizations, the imagery, I think that needs to be there, has to be followed up with clear thinking, understanding what it takes, and be a willingness to put all those pieces together.
Now, the cool thing is, I mean, we were talking before you came on here, that obviously this has applications for sports, but it also has applications in a broader sense, just in your life as a whole, right? Because sports, if you abstract it away a bit, is just a skill. I mean, it could be, I mean, you know, sales, or I don't know, but it could be some other field that requires dedication and skill and technique and things of that nature, but it's connecting with this kind of this knowledge, this impetus that it's real mm-hmm. and that you're actually doing it.
Yep. Yeah.
Authentic, like.
It is. You know, and I spent almost 10 years in the corporate sales world at one point. Most of my career has been in coaching, and that was an interesting experience to go through kind of the corporate chain of meeting quotas and having pressure and stress and it absolutely is the same principles. You know, you got to get in there.
It's competitive.
It's very competitive, and there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
just like with an athlete. And
that deal, like closing a deal, is not all that different than a match.
It's the same. I think it's the same. I mean, they have to have their skill down. They have to know how to get in there and, you know, present and then close the deal and follow through with the deal and.
Not be a sore loser or be a sore winner, all that.
Keep it in perspective, yeah, for the long haul. I mean, you know, you hear a lot of... I was reading an article recently about Dyson, you know, the guy who created the bagless vacuum.
Yeah.
And he said something that I thought was really true. He said, we celebrate failure at our company. He was talking about how they train their people, and they say, because we know that's how we learn, you know. And so we're okay with failing, because we're going to learn from it, you know. And
as long as you learn from it
and yeah. you fix the problems and you move on and you're doing things better
and not stay in the failure and beat yourself up over the failure, but look at it like as a stepping stone to winning or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. This is really something that's up, I know, obviously Brandon's alley. And when we come back, we're bumping up against our break here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit, obviously going more in depth into the philosophy, into the ideas. But I also want to, you know, find out where the rubber meets the road, and especially in Brandon's story, because I know him personally, and I know the sacrifices this guy makes. I mean, he lives and breathes it. His whole family is behind me. I mean, this is just powerful stuff, and I know how much he wanted to be the world's best, and he is now. And I want to talk how your relationship helped there, you know, and I want to talk to Brandon about that, those little differences that make all the difference. Come on back, guys. We got Brandon Reese and Joey Johnson talking about worthy to win. Come on back. Welcome. We'll be right back after the break.
Utah Cottages, a division of California Casitas, solves problems.
They'll create a home office, add a mother-in-law apartment, or build a five-star cottage in your backyard in 30 days.
See for yourself at utahcottages.com. Elegant cottage designs from 400 square feet to over 1,000 square feet.
Most offer a living room, kitchen, and full bedroom suite. Some offer two bedrooms.
Most can be customized with exactly the space you need. It can all happen on your existing property or wherever you choose in as little as 30 days at a price you could afford.
Utah Cottages are perfect for guest houses, mother-in-law apartments, or incredible backyard retreats. The only problem is your guests may never want to leave.
All the amenities with no wasted space. Kids move back in? Seniors need low-maintenance living near the family. Need rental income? Utah Cottages has the answer. Call now for details. 801-259-1900. That's 259-1900. See for yourself at utahcottages.com or call 801-259-1900.
Has your business suffered from lack of money needed to get through these tough times? Hi, this is Larry Friest of the Friest Report, and I want to introduce you to a company that can help you obtain the financing you need. The company is Tame the Spider. Visit TameTheSpider.com, where you will see we have, after nearly 25 years of banking and business experience, selected funding sources that can provide a line of credit, refinancing of existing debt with cash out, money for equipment and machinery purchases, SBA loans, and capital to purchase commercial real estate.
Go to TameTheSpider.com and fill out the request form or give us a call at 801-885-0748. That's TameTheSpider.com or 801-885-0748. 801-885-0748 for all of your capital needs. That's TameTheSpider.com. Or 801-885-0748.
See you Thursday morning at 9 a.m. on the Friest Report.
Over 20 million Americans suffer from a life-threatening health risk known as obstructive sleep apnea. For people with OSA, snoring through a bad night's sleep can contribute to heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, stroke, sexual dysfunction, and shorten your lifespan by 8 to 10 years. You need Dr. Miles Prebble, the OSA dentist. He's helped hundreds of folks like you or a loved one with this problem. Call 801-278-4787. 801-278-4787. Remember, when you laugh, the world laughs with you. Snore, and you sleep alone.
The Voice of Utah, AM 630 K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
Ricky, don't lose that number. You don't want to call nobody else.
All right, welcome back, Mental Self-Defense Radio. I am Jake Shannon, joined in studio by Brandon Reese, who is a local guy, a friend of mine, but a friend of mine through wrestling. And Brandon is pretty much top of the food chain right now. He is the heavyweight gold medalist, the world champion for an organization known as FILA. You might have heard of them, for the World Grappling Games. Now, Brandon, for people who may not be familiar, obviously, people kind of know grappling a little bit because it's in the UFC and that's so big and trendy right now, but grappling itself, it differs slightly from wrestling, right? I mean, there's some different rules. Just kind of in a nutshell, how would you describe that for people who may never really known that there is kind of this formal sport of grappling?
So in the simplest way to describe it, if you've ever seen like a high school wrestling match, the end goal is to pin your opponent's shoulders to the mat. And in wrestling, anything that you do on your way to earning a pinning position will gain you points, and with the pin winning outright. In grappling, the end goal is to gain a submission hold, making your opponent surrender to you, basically giving up verbally or via what's called tap out. They tap you a couple of times and to signify that they've given up. Very similar to wrestling in that anything that you do on the way to gaining the submission hold will gain you points, with the submission hold actually ending the match outright. So very similar, just slightly different end goals.
Yeah, although I will have to say this, that I mean, in wrestling, and wrestling is a rough sport for anybody who's never wrestled. I mean, usually when they talk about who's the best athletes, the strongest, all that kind of stuff, it always comes down to the gymnasts and the wrestlers. I mean, when you're talking the Olympic type of sports. So I don't think people a lot of times really understand how grueling of an ordeal that is. But, you know, grappling, I you know, in wrestling, there's a lot of stuff. The refs are watching, you know, they're ready to toot on that whistle the second you're going to cause harm to the other guy. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen in a match, but the aim is a little different, right? Grappling, you're actually trying to hurt the guy without punching him or poking him in the eye. You're trying to twist his arm or do something that actually he's going to have to give up or it'll break type of thing, right? I mean, it's
yeah,
pain.
We're trying to add a degree of pain so that he will willingly comply to our movements and also.
You're such a good spokesman. You're like so nice. You're making it so sterile.
No,
let me
tell
you,
yeah,
it hurts.
We're
especially
to,
when this guy cranks.
We're
on
trying
you.
To go out and choke the guy unconscious. Yeah, that, if you want me to put it in the simplest terms, that's the end goal.
It's a so, tough yeah. sport, and so you actually, where were the last? I know that you've traveled the world, but the last games. These the where you won the gold medal. Where were you?
That was in Serbia, actually in Belgrade, Serbia. So that was a really fun experience.
But that adds a whole new dimension to the mental game, right? Because you're not, you know, we talk about home court advantage or whatever. That's like totally out the window. You're not even in the United States. People don't even speak your language anymore.
Yeah, definitely not home court. And you know, one of the things that you know, we talk about in sport or, you know, wrestling specifically, grappling specifically, but just sport in general, everybody says, oh yeah, it's 100% mental or it's 90% mental. My biggest question is, well, then why do we spend 90 or sometimes 100% of our time working in the physical game? And so part of me meeting Joey was really the answer to my puzzle. And, you know, that when I met him, the things that we worked on really started to get me thinking differently and started to open up how I went about my training and how I went about just thinking about my sport. And that was a huge step for me. And so, you know, dealing with those kind of mental pressures, dealing with those kind of emotional pressures, I really had to learn. Not, you know, everybody thinks, oh, it's all hard, it's all this, it's all that. Well, it's all kind of saying the same thing in just a little bit different way. It's really understanding how to control your mental state and your emotional state and being able to execute. And that's a learned skill. It's not something that you just show up with.
Yeah, it's so weird because, you know, everybody seems to, it's like a no-brainer with sports in particular, but they all think that you're right. Like, it's all, you know, well, I'm just going to drill this technique over and over and over and over and over. But there's so much more to it. I mean, if your head is not in the game and you're thinking about everything other than what you should be focused on, you're not going to perform the way that you had hoped you would. And it's like anything. If you want to perform in the moment, you've got to rehearse it, whether it's in your head or whether it's with your muscles, right?
Exactly. You know, and a lot of times I think coaches, you know, bless their hearts, they try their best, but sometimes they just say, well, let's do it harder. Let's do it more. Let's do this. And, you know, in my mind and in my experience,
the Dan Gable approach, it just outwork.
It works for some people.
Yeah.
But the majority, I think it really counteracts because you can only do it so hard. You can only do it so many times before that frustration really sets in and starts to do things and really disrupts your identity. It disrupts your patterns of actually doing it. And it rather than helping you get better, it actually starts to make you get worse. And it kind of puts you on this downward cycle. And that was something that I really learned working with Joey in his Worthy to Win program and really being able to see where that was taking place in myself and starting to understand what was going on with myself as a competitor and really getting to see how I needed to make changes and how I needed to make those adjustments to be more successful.
Well, and that's a good point I think that you raise about not working so hard, because in your situation, it's not a luxury that you have. You're a family man. You got a full-time job. And then you're working and training on top of that. And you need to be able to make the most of that so that when you're in Serbia, you nail it like you did. I mean, this is really awesome. Now, Joey, you know, I'm looking at the book which you brought in, which is just, I mean, it really is. It's sharp. It's a very nice-looking book. But you have a website too, right? What is it? Just worthytowin.com?
Worthytowin.com.
And what do people find there when they they're listening right now at home or on their computer and they type it in? What are they going to expect?
They're going to see, you know, a front page that talks about the basic premise of the training. They can purchase an online book. They can it talks about my online training course. I have an online training course.
Oh, good.
That mirrors the content of the book. That it talks about, you know, my consulting. I work with a lot of people who are looking for ongoing training, where they'll meet with me weekly or monthly, and so all the packages and just information on the process. I mean, what, you know, Brandon speaks really succinctly about the process, I think, that an athlete goes through, because he's gone through it at a very high level, and it's great to hear him talk about it because he understands it and he lives it. But in the book, I basically piece together, there's 8 steps that help create just the right thought patterns, the right way of seeing things, and they're all different. And so when I work with athletes, people, business people, whatever, I'll sit down with them, and we'll do an assessment and kind of find out which pieces are missing and help and start chipping away at those particular pieces.
So you kind of look at, you assume that there's 8 segments that need to be looked at, and almost like the equalizer on a stereo, some are turned up, some are down, and wherever the deficiency is, you're going to start really
correct
cranking that up a bit.
Yep, that's it. And once they start, you know, seeing maybe one or two pieces differently, I mean, it could be like one of the steps is called the 7 faces of a champion, and it deals with 7 common performance mindsets. Like, for example, a lot of good athletes are perfectionists. They do. That's why their technique is so great.
Yeah.
And that can be double-edged, you know. And we talk about the positives, and we talk about the negatives.
Yeah, and how to go into obsession.
Yeah, totally.
And then all of a sudden your wife or your friends are mad because it's like, give it a rest.
And so we go into and how that those mindsets that are natural for that person, how they come out under pressure. And we look at the thought patterns they have. And, you know, so this deals with things like, you know, a person who has struggles to finish off a match, for example, or a game, you know, or a person who starts too slow, or a person who gets passive at certain points, or a person who's over-aggressive. And there's all these different, there's a million different aspects of that that come out.
One of the things that I think has helped me the most is really being able to understand myself, but it's also allowed me to understand my opponent. Mm. And if you're, especially in a one-on-one sport like grappling, wrestling, tennis, those type of sports, it gives you a huge advantage because you can really start to see and understand when the other guy is going to start to have glitches in his strategy. He's going to have glitches in his way of thinking. And that, for me, is really where I've been able to excel the last few years, especially where I've tried to put 80-90% of my time into more of the developing strategies and developing game plans, whether it's for a tournament or whether it's for a specific opponent. And it's really paid off a lot because I can see those things a lot better. And for the listeners out there that, okay, how has this helped me? Well, it helps you specifically, you know, whether it's you as an athlete or your kid or your grandkid, you can be able to say, okay, now you know who you are and you know more, that much more about the other guy, and now you can pick him apart. And
I see. So not only are you bolstering your side of the defense or whatever, but then you realize, hey, this other guy, he's a human being and he's got the same weird mix of strengths and weaknesses, and it gives you maybe a way with these 8 different things to look at. You can also pick apart where they're strong and where they're weak, and obviously maybe attack where they're weak type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's for me is one of the funnest things, where you can force people to make mistakes. You basically, I call it choose how you want to die. Like, I'll put them in a position and I know the ins, I know the outs, I know what they're thinking, and now they get to choose how I'm going to win the match. And that is the most fun for me.
That's brilliant. You know, because one of the things Billy always tells me is, he says, close off three of the doors so they only have one way out, and then you know exactly what to do. I mean, that's really brilliant. So Joey, you know, with regards to this program, I mean, how did you get from banging a tennis ball in a grungy old against a grungy old wall to where you are right now, you know, coaching other people, with writing the book? I mean, what was the transition for you?
That's kind of the journey that I went on, because I went from, you know, being this, I mean, I'll just do a quick timeline. I went from, you know, local tennis in Duluth, Minnesota, to having a dream. I wanted to be a Division I tennis player, you know, and I say in my book, I got laughed at a lot, which was fine. It was like, all right, I'm going to keep going, and because I love this thing. And so I ended up playing, I worked my way up through junior college, and I ended up playing at Ole Miss on a full scholarship. We were a top 25 Division I team. Did that. After college, I did play some pro tournaments, and then really submerged myself in coaching after I got through playing for a few years. And as I started getting into the coaching world, you know, I recognized that there was a part of me, and I talk about this in the book, that as a younger athlete, I did feel unworthy. I felt like, you know, there was those self-sabotage pieces that would enter in. Some of them were actually based on the fact that I had deficiencies in my game, and I don't think I realized it. And others,
so real doubts that actually you deserved.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll have parents will call me and they'll say, "Hey, I want you to work with my kid. We want this guy to be a national champion or whatever." And they'll say, and it's all mental, right? And then I'll go watch this athlete compete, and I'll say, you know, and you'll see obvious deficiencies, and you'll say it's always a combination. I mean, It all blends together. So what happened?
But
with
some of these doubts are legitimate. Like
they
actually
legitimate.
Do have parts where they suck.
Right.
I'll say it. You don't have to say it because I know you
exactly.
Gotta be nice. But they have parts where they suck, and that needs to be addressed. But then maybe they have parts where they're actually just getting in their own way.
Correct.
In their head.
It can be both. Yeah, and it's important to distinguish the difference between those. And understand, help them understand when which one's happening. But with me, I spent a few years on the pro tour, coaching a pretty high level tour player, and that's when I started crafting a workbook. Basically, it was these 8 steps came out of that experience, and I had a lot of success with this player. I mean, he broke into at one point into the top 100 in the world in tennis. That's a pretty high level. So, you know, I was there at a Grand Slam level and, you know, doing things. But that's when the whole program was put together, and then.
So that's like the laboratory. You're sitting there.
That was the laboratory.
Mad scientist testing and yep. honing and getting all these results back.
Yep, that's when it all happened, and I spent tons of time putting it all together, and then field tested on. And then from there, I went to the Olympic Training Center, worked with Brandon and a couple other athletes there, and then and have spent a lot of time in the junior sports world as well, and some other, you know, some other pro level athletes as well, but. And then from there, I branched into, you know, speaking at some business events and things like that, you know, bringing it into the corporate world and any kind of environment that has a pressure to it, which is most of them. And so that's how it all developed.
Yeah, because this could, I mean, ultimately, obviously, you know, sports is great because it's immediate. Like, you know if it's working or not. Whereas sales, it's maybe a little more esoteric in some places. But any time where there's pressure, whether it's business, you could even probably find it in people who perform, like singers or actors or anybody who's got to, in the moment, perform and do it. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of pressure, a little bit of competition. Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. So again, the website, Worthy to Win, and it's all
just
spelled out, not the number to win or anything like that.
Right.
WorthyToWin.com. And then the book is, where do people get the book? Obviously at the website, but...
It's at the website, yeah. Right now it's at the website, and I'm focusing a lot of my clientele toward the online training course, but I have an ebook and a book, and so depending on what they want to do...
And it's immediate, then they don't have to wait for shipping,
correct.
And then it's more interactive and stuff, I'm assuming.
Correct. That's why the online training was developed, to make it more interactive for them.
Awesome. Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. So, Brandon, I mean... When did you first meet Joey? Like, how many years ago? Or
It's been about 8-9 years. My wife and I moved out to Colorado Springs so I could train at the Olympic Center in wrestling, and that was back in 2003. I met Joey probably about 4 or 5 months after that. So I've been working with him specifically from 2004 through about 2006, and then off and on, just kind of tweaking things and maintaining. Since then, so about 8-9 years.
So, and as again, a real top level, I mean, the best on the planet, honestly, you do have to sharpen that mental saw. It's not just the physical. I mean, it is about getting your head right, getting proper perspective and things of that nature.
Sure, yeah. Well, and you know, I think being at this level, you really realize quickly that you maybe you're not as strong as this other guy, or you're maybe not as quick. You know, everybody has an outstanding physical trait or two, and you can't possibly have them all. I don't care who you are. I don't care how hard you work. You're just not. It's just not physically possible. And I think the biggest place where people can make their progress is in the mental game and learning strategies and learning how to understand other competitors, learning how to understand themselves. And really, for me, when I go out on the mat, now, I've always got a game plan. I've always got a strategy. I always have a home base, so to speak.
Yeah, it's crucial. Guys, we're talking about Worthy to Win. Check them out, worthytowin.com. We've got Brandon Reese, world gold medalist in the field of grappling games, and the designer Worthy to Win, Joey Johnson. Come on back. If you got questions, 801-254-5855. Come on back after the break, guys.
Are you ready for some fun? It's time to get out and play. Grab your kids, grandkids, and the kid in you. Experience the fun of radio-controlled cars, trucks, boats, and helicopters. Visit www.primehobbies.com, your online hobby store. We only stock name brand products, Traxxas radio-controlled cars and trucks, HPI Racing, Align Helicopters,
Team Associated and Quest Aerospace. If you're tired of buying and buying and buying the discount store junk, stop by PrimeHobbies.com and purchase a vehicle that will last for years with parts support to keep you up and running. Let Prime Hobbies be your number one trusted online hobby superstore. For fun delivered right to your door, go to PrimeHobbies.com. That's www.PrimeHobbies.com. Let the fun begin. www.PrimeHobbies.com.
Hey everybody, this is Doug with Top Gun Arms. Are you a first-time gun buyer, or are you a seasoned gun owner? We want to help you with your firearms needs. We have a full line of handguns, tactical rifles and shotguns, NFA or Class 3 weapons and silencers, as well as firearms accessories, ammunition, and reloading supplies. We carry Rock River, 6-Hour, Springfield, Ruger, Taurus, and more. We offer great customer service and have a good selection at competitive pricing. Hey, don't delay. We're giving away a Top Gun Arms t-shirt with all firearms purchases. Call us at 801-979-0827 or go to TopGunArms.com. That's 979-0827 or TopGunArms.com. At Top Gun Arms, we'll work hard for your business. Call us at 801-979-0827 or go to TopGunArms.com. That's 979-0827 or TopGunArms.com.
The Voice of Utah. AM 630 K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
Hello, it's me.
All right, guys, welcome back. Mental Self-Defense Radio. I am Jake Shannon, joined today by the best grappler on the entire planet, and he's local, Brandon Reese. He's a friend of mine, but he brought in a guy that, this is something that's very fascinating to me. This is a subject that I really get into. Worthy to Win. Check it out, worthytowin.com. He's got a book there. He's got an online training course. Joey Johnson, he's a coach. Coaches athletes, but really with an emphasis on the mental game. And this is really important, guys. And this, like we've kind of touched on, and if you guys are just tuning in, if you want to get on the phone, you want to ask these guys questions, we only get them for another 20 minutes. So now is the time. 801-254-5855. Otherwise, Joey's going to start charging you. And I know Brandon charges up the wazoo, so now's your chance, guys. Again, 801-254-5855. The thing that's really cool about this that I connect with is that, you know, as a kid, you know, I was wrestling, doing martial arts, and I got real sick. I had cancer. That's how I got turned on to hypnosis, which was for me a big part of the mental game of things. And I've had real problems as a result of the treatments from the cancer. And yet, I will say this. I am not an athlete. Like, you look at Brandon, then you look at me. And it's like, it's obvious, okay? Brandon is like, he looks like a well-groomed Incredible Hulk. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, he really is a beast. You hear him on the radio and he's all like articulate and stuff, but seriously, you don't want this guy mad at you, especially on the mat, especially now that he's got Worthy to Win in his brain. But, you know, for me, what's worked, I'm kind of this noodly little guy. I've been around the scene for a long time, but always the reason why I'm able to at least hang with these guys, not necessarily consistently win or anything, but hang with these guys, is the mental side of wrestling for me. I mean, I am just like a vacuum for trying to find new and different techniques, and that's kind of how I stumbled onto this catch-as-catch-can style wrestling that I focus on. And that's really where anything that I have comes from, the fact that it's a mental game for me. I know different strategies and angles, and that's worked so well for me. And I'm in this catch-22. I'm glad I'm getting older because I get an excuse, because now that I tell everybody my tricks, they don't work anymore, and it really sucks. But anyway, I'm thrilled to have these guys here. You know, during the break, Brandon, we were talking a little bit about a real, you know, a life situation where you actually had to... I think sometimes people might get freaked out. This guy's a world champion. What do I know? I'm, you know, working at 7-Eleven or something. I don't know. You know, I want people to connect that you're a real guy. I mean, I know the sacrifices you make for this sport and all that kind of stuff. But what was one of these things where you applied these ideas from Worthy to Win and it was night and day? Like, you know, you would just had to get out of your own way. And it was so obvious, but it took the hard work, the mental game to make it happen. What is something like that?
Well, to just kind of back up just a tiny bit and give a brief history, I do not come from a wrestling family. My parents actually train and show horses, and so I grew up from, you know, working around livestock and all that kind of stuff.
When did you start? How old were you?
I didn't even start wrestling until I was in high school, until I was a sophomore. And I think one of the saving graces was that I knew how to work hard, and I was too dumb to know any better, and so I just kind of went with it. But, my younger brother was able to start later than I did, and so he was able to have some success. And so
Justin
yep. Reese, yeah, he's actually on the U.S. world team. He's actually trying to get the United States qualified for the Olympics, so our prayers are with
him. That's happening right now.
Yeah, that's happening this week, so hopefully he makes it. And he's got to qualify the United States before he even has a chance to compete.
Talk about pressure.
Yeah, anyway, long story there, but anyway, keep him in your prayers. So anyway, Justin and I were kind of, you know, going along and doing well, and he started to really have some breakthroughs at the junior level, whereas I was, you know, kind of the forerunner, and so he was able to learn from a lot of my mistakes, and, you know, he was able to kind of get a little bit more coaching than I was, and so I always kind of felt like, hey, what's wrong with me? You know, because and it's, I hate to say it this way, but I was comparing myself to him a little bit.
It's natural.
You know, I mean, he's your brother, and yeah. I mean, you both, I thought we should both be doing about the same as well. And I was placing, you know, second and third at national tournaments where he's winning the national tournaments. And so, you know, I'm like, well, why isn't it happening for me yet? And so I kind of just, you know, and I was thinking, well, I need to develop everything I can. So I'm going to learn the mental side of things. You know, my parents were always really big into affirmations, and they were big into, you know, the mental side of things. And so I kind of followed suit, and I was, you know, like I say, went on like this throughout high school and college. And then even at the Olympic Center, I still felt like, you know, I'm not quite there. I'm on the bubble. What do I got to do? And then I came along.
Which is that self-talk that Joey mm-hmm. was talking about.
Yep. And I kind of came along Joey, and he just really started putting all those pieces together for me. And it was a long process. I mean, I was very fortunate to find Joey, and then beyond that, I was also very fortunate to make the decision, the actual conscious decision, to change sports and change my focus. And I found more success by doing that. And, you know, and I think that goes for anything in life. Sometimes we might spend so much time on one road and we can only see one way, when in reality, all you got to do is just change your vehicle.
It's like flip over the menu, mm-hmm. and there's a whole new host of things on the menu.
Change the vehicle you're in, and you'll still be able to have the same general destination. You know, I wanted to be the best in the world in wrestling, and I made that one little adjustment and changed the sport that I was in.
And here you are.
And here I am, world champion now. You know, and so I think sometimes, whether it's in life or business or whatever, you know, you've got to be open to those possibilities. I mean, it's not like I reinvented the wheel per se, but just a couple of little tweaks in those regards made all the difference for me.
Yeah, see, and this is something that I get this all the time as a hypnotist. Now, I don't necessarily get it in sports. I've seen a couple of sports hypnosis clients, but it's kind of the same thing, where I like to call it like the golden rule in reverse, right? You meet somebody on the street, and you just know, I'm going to treat them nicely. But if you treated yourself, if you treated somebody else out on the street the way you treat yourself, they probably clock you, some of the ways that you talk to yourself. Mm. And it's so like this golden rule in reverse. I mean, it really is. There's a lot of people out there holding themselves back. And it's this combination of being extra rude and mean to themselves. But then I think there's another component to it. And you tell me, because this is, you know, this is, I don't know if this applies as well to sports. But the other side of it is we're extra rough on ourselves in some regards and things like that. But then we're total flakes on the other hand. Like, we say we're going to do something and then we don't do it. And if we were in a relationship and it was a business relationship and somebody was a total flake, you'd have no respect for that person. You wouldn't trust them. If you trusted them with something important, like winning a tournament or something, of course you'd have anxiety and be freaked out and that kind of stuff, because they're a flake. And so it's about this idea of, one, being able to trust yourself, and two, just be nice. Give yourself at least the minimum amount of respect that you would give to a stranger.
You know, that's a good point. I think that we all have different defense mechanisms. I mean, and I have a term I used in my book called padding our ego, where we're putting padding down because we think we're going to fail anyway. And
yeah,
you know, but I think everyone, you know, at a certain level under pressure will kick in with defense mechanisms. And this is the one of the biggest things indicator of someone who's going to break through is that they reach a point where they're very aware and they're self-honest. You know, there's a level of awareness where they're really looking. They're looking at all the tough stuff about
them.
They
know what they're doing. They just can't get that little nudge.
And they're willing now. They're open. They're a little more. They've opened themselves up to go, I got to look at this. This is it. And I'm going to look at everything. You know, and once. And that's the thing, like with Brandon. He's just one of those guys who's just. He exudes that. And that's why I think he grew and developed so rapidly. I mean, you know, when I say rapidly, I mean, it took time as he made that transition from...
But I think, you know, Brandon touched on something. He said when he was young, he didn't have wrestling coaching when he was young or whatever. He just was working with horses, knew how to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you take that persistence, that just not afraid to just put in the work, but aim it at not just the physical, but the mental side. That's when you get to be unstoppable. That's right. When it's like, people better look out.
It definitely was not rapid, so let's scratch that from the record books. No, it was a long, drawn-out process, and, you know, I didn't start making my major breakthroughs until I went through the Worthy to Win process. Like, I can't say enough about it, just because it was me, like Joey's banging his tennis ball, I was banging my head against the wall. Right? That's what it was for me. So
again, for you guys, look, the point is this. Obviously, sports is a big part of all our lives. You know, most people have at least touched on it, even those people who were couch potatoes at some point in their childhood. But this goes beyond sports. This is about any situation where you put yourself out there and test yourself. And that happens to us every day. So check this out, worthytowin.com. You can get Joey's book. You can get in touch with Joey, right? There's Absolutely. Online training at the website. And then, Brandon, is people who want to stay in touch with you, follow your exploits as you stand atop a bloody heap of bodies and broken bones. Where do they? How do they do that? What do you have a website? What's your website?
Yeah, my website is reisecombatgrappling.com.
And R-U-I-Z combat... Wrestling?
Grappling.
Grappling. So R-U-I-Z, combatgrappling.com.
Yep.
And then find you also on Facebook and stuff like that.
Facebook is fine, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. So, you know, sometimes the hard challenge is this, and I'm interested in your perspective. We've got about 5 minutes left. You know, sometimes using your mind to look at your mind... is a challenge, right? It's like using a telescope to look at the telescope you're looking through. It's all, like, unless you set up a mirror way like a couple miles away, you're not even going to get a look at it. How did you develop kind of this self-awareness, this ability to kind of sit back and notice this in yourself? I mean, was it more about for yourself and getting kind of a glimpse of it and then starting looking at other athletes and getting confirmation? Or what was kind of the genesis for you to kind of your breakthrough? With regards to the process?
For me personally, I mean?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it's funny because my wife always says to me, yeah, you need your own Worthy to Win coach, you know? I mean, so it's always tougher when you're dealing with yourself. I think for me it was just, you know, it's been a process as I've worked with people. I mean, because inherently I see myself as a coach, you know? And as I've come to understand, you know, and apply certain concepts to others, you know, I can certainly flip them over to myself. And, you know, am I getting more clear about the message for myself in my own life? You know, that is tricky. I mean, it's
hard, right? Dentists don't pull their own teeth typically, or
right,
doctors
exactly.
Don't perform their own surgery. So,
but I do think that, you know, as you're really talking about and understanding the different pieces, you can start to apply them in your own life and go, hey, you know what, I'm not stepping up in that one area or this area or that area. And
it kind of requires getting that padding out of the way and being straight with yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm trying to work at that just like everyone else is. But you know, the great thing is that when you're around people who are making it happen, like Brandon, you know, and I, you know, we talked not long ago, and I said, what are the biggest changes that have occurred in you over this period of a few years? And you could just hear it in his voice when he talked about things he was, because I said, what are you focusing on as you get ready for the, for the Grappling World Championships. I think we talked a little bit before then. And I sat and listened to him. And I listened to people's tone, what they're saying, how they're saying it. And
there's
I
like real confidence.
Yeah, you can just, you know, you have that discussion X amount of times and you start to know. And I could just hear it in his voice. And I could also hear that he has a much better grasp of himself. And you know what I mean? As a competitor and as a person, you could just, it was like, wow. And I'm like, he's really learned a lot. And that was a neat thing to see. It was very gratifying to it, and I feel very privileged to have worked with him. So,
yeah, this is awesome. I appreciate you guys coming in. I mean, really, this goes quick. We're already, we've got less than a minute left. So, again, check out Brandon over at ReeseCombatGrappling.com. You can also find him on Facebook. He's there too. And you blog rather regularly, and you talk about all kinds of things, from technique to mental stuff to diet, all kinds of things, right?
Yeah, on my blog I focus specifically more for grappling and wrestling, but I do cover quite a wide range because there are a lot of things involved. So,
and then Joey, Worthy to Win, any other places or any other, or is pretty much everything there?
I'm on Facebook as
so
well.
Look up Joey Johnson.
Joey Johnson on Facebook, and then mainly the website. Yeah.
Okay, so worthytowin.com, and check out Worthy to Win, the book, Emerging from Fear and Self-Doubt, When You Know the Potential is There, 8 Steps to Your Next Breakthrough. Really fascinating stuff. I appreciate you guys coming into Studio 2. Again, guys, Brandon Reese, check him out, ReeseCombatGrappling.com and WorthyToWin.com. Come on back after the break, guys. More Mental Self-Defense Radio. AM 630, K-Talk, Boise, Utah.
Captain Salty here, always bragging about Neil's Halibut and Seafood, the original famous fish and chips house, serving the Wasatch Front since 1994. Deep fried, battered halibut and cod, succulent, crisp, and tasty, Neil serves up a huge gluten-free menu. Now you can enjoy gluten-free fish and chips. So wonderful is Neil's Halibut and Seafood that you'll return again and again. Trust the captain. Choose a chimichanga. Oh, it's good. Indulge on a grilled or crispy fish taco. There's tasty burgers, tender chicken, hearty sandwiches and all the sides. Two can eat a hearty meal for only $25. To start, select for fresh batter zucchini to a monster-sized onion rings. Two orders of two-piece halibut with fries and salad or coleslaw if you prefer. Two soft drinks and finish your meal with a sorbet ice cream dessert. There's always a cold one on tap to quench your thirst, mateys. All this and much, much more at Neil's Halibut and Seafood, 123rd South in Draper, barely east of I-15. See you there.
Hi, I'm John with Competitive Comfort Heating and Air, 801-419-6621. We have an awesome air conditioning offer for you. Because the snow's on the Elkers, get a new air conditioner installed in your home starting at $2,195. We normally offer this unit for $3,000. It includes a $350 clean air package, absolutely free. You'll want to take advantage of us while it's still slow, because at the end of April, we'll be busy and everyone's prices will go up. So call now at 801-419-6621. Why call us instead of the other guy? Well, besides the amazing amount of money you'll save, we believe the customer's always right. I'll not only give you a temperature guarantee, but a 12-month money-back satisfaction guarantee in writing. Go with the guy who saves you money and puts his guarantees in writing, and get a free clean air package. Call me at 801-419-6621. That's 801-419-6621. But you got to call me while the snow's still on the Okers. Call me at 801-419-6621. That's 801-419-6621.
You're listening to Utah's first number one talk station. K-Talk, AM 630, KTKK, Sandy, Salt Lake City. The whole truth and nothing but the truth.
NBC News Radio, I'm Pete Williams. Federal prosecutors have charged 107 people in 7 cities with running schemes to cheat Medicare. Attorney General Eric Holder says they're accused of trying to scam the system to the tune of $452 million.
This is the highest amount of alleged false Medicare billings involved in a single takedown in the Strike Force's 5-year history.
The Chinese dissident who took refuge in the U.S. Embassy in Beijing left there today. Chinese officials say he'll be allowed to stay in the country with his family. State Department spokesman Mark Toner says the U.S. is vowing to keep close watch on the case.
We're in a situation now where
you know, we're going to continue to monitor his case very, very closely. We realize now that, you know, we've got to make sure that that these commitments are followed through on.
And Newt Gingrich has made it official. He's abandoning his campaign for the Republican nomination for president. He managed to win primarily two states. This is NBC News Radio. In Florida, state prosecutors have charged 13 people in the hazing death of Robert Champion, a drum major at Florida A&M University. NBC's Kerry Sanders says he died at the hands of fellow students on a bus.
The prosecutors said that this was homicide by hazing. He said that there was a culture at the university, at the band, one that is not acceptable, and that Robert Champion on the bus in Orlando that day was pummeled and beaten by other members of the band.
And former pro football star Junior Seau has been found dead at his California home. First reports say it's an apparent suicide by gunshot. He led the San Diego Chargers to the Super Bowl following the 1994 season, then played for the Miami Dolphins and the New England Patriots. 2 years ago, Seau was arrested after a woman claimed that he assaulted her during an argument. Junior Seau played for the University of Southern California before going pro. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Pete Williams, NBC News Radio.
Hands can do incredible things. They made every sound in this piece of music. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. Visit handsonlycpr.org today. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
I'm Professor Burke from the University of Farmers, and this is a pop quiz. What's the best way to find out what your auto policy covers? A, smash your car up and see how much your insurance pays, or B, talk to a highly trained farmer's agent and see if you have the coverage you want. The answer is B. Please don't attempt A. That's just crazy town.
If you want answers about auto insurance, you want a farmer's agent. Find yours at farmers.com. We are insurance.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, dum, bum, 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 bum.
Coverage not available in all states.
Now you can dial a diamond and save half by calling Empire Diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. If you're in the market for a solitaire, engagement ring, anniversary, or investment diamond, then shop around, get the best price, and then dial a diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Empire will advise you on size, shapes, and values. They'll sell you diamonds directly from the source without a middleman's markup. These diamonds are guaranteed to be priced at half the retail price. A diamond certification by the Gemological Institute of America will be faxed or mailed to you. For qualified buyers, your diamond will be sent to your home or office for a free 10-day no-obligation inspection. Upon your satisfaction, you then pay for your purchase and get a 60-day money-back guarantee. Empire Diamond, located in the Empire State Building for over half a century, guarantees the lowest-priced diamonds, 10-day free inspection, and money-back guarantee. Save over half on your diamonds. Call 1-800-SAVE-HALF. That's 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Visit us at dialadiamond.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Doug with Top Gun Arms. Are you a first-time gun buyer, or are you a seasoned gun owner? We want to help you with your firearms needs. We have a full line of handguns, tactical rifles and shotguns, NFA or Class 3 weapons and silencers, as well as firearms accessories, ammunition, and reloading supplies. We carry Rock River, Six Hour, Springfield, Ruger, Taurus, and more. We offer great customer service and have a good selection at competitive pricing. Hey, don't delay. We're giving away a Top Gun Arms t-shirt with all firearms purchases. Call us at 801-979-0827 or go to TopGunArms.com. That's 979-0827 or TopGunArms.com. At Top Gun Arms, we'll work hard for your business. Call us at 801-979-0827 or go to TopGunArms.com. That's 979-0827 or TopGunArms.com.
This is Larry Friess of the Friess Report. Every Thursday morning at 9 a.m., we will help you make the most of your money and invest in yourself this year. Come explore the world of finance and business and how today's politics affects your pocketbook. Join us to share your opinion and to learn from our local experts with advice on savings, taxes, legal issues, wealth building, and investment strategies. Please join me, Larry Friess, on the Friess Report every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. as we navigate our way through current issues and help you be resilient, invest in yourself, and create your own economy.
Come on.
love my good.
Exposing politics as pro wrestling. Welcome to Mental Self-Defense Radio and the Jake Shannon Radio Program. Now, here's your host, Jake Shannon.
5-1, baby. 1-5. No one here gets out alive now. You get yours, baby. I'll get mine. Gonna make it, baby, if we try.
All right, guys, welcome back. Mental Self-Defense Radio. I am your host, Jake Shannon. If you guys did not catch the first hour, you seriously missed out. I mean, I don't know what to tell you guys. I know we're on in the middle of the day, but, you know, I'm sorry, that's not an excuse. Go to k-talk.com, go to archives, find my name, click on it, download today's show. Just spoke with Joey Johnson, Brandon Reese, about the mental game of things, and we're talking, you know... in the field of sports, but this applies across the board. It's about getting more control in your life. And the first thing is admitting that a large part of what you do is not in your control. It's automatic. You don't have to think about it. It's your unconscious. But how do you tap into that? So you can check out, you know, especially for you athletes out there, but also works for business and whatnot, worthytowin.com. That's Joey Johnson's program, the one that Brandon came in here. He contacted me. He was thrilled about it. He was like, yeah, we got to get him on the air. Brandon, you got to check him out. Follow him. This guy is traveling the world. He just came back from Serbia and brought back the world championship to Utah. Feel it, the World Grappling Games. Here. I mean, literally the heavyweight champion lives here for grappling. That's submission wrestling, guys. And I do it, and I've trained with Brandon a bit, and the guy is just, I mean, you hear him on the radio, and he's real nice and real polite and real articulate, but the guy is just an animal, and I mean it in the best way when it comes to the sport. Anyway, I hope you guys are doing good. Curious, if you heard it, any of that really resonates with you. Give us a call, 801-254-5855. And again, if it does, you don't have to call in. It's okay if you do. Normal caveat applies. You know, if the line is busy, call right back. We do want to get you on. If the line is ringing, hang in there. We will get you on. Lots of stuff going on in the news today that I wanted to get to. Just such interesting times that we live in. Something I was excited about, that is the state of Connecticut. This is kind of an interesting development. I was on a website, ArsTechnica.com, which is kind of a technology website. And Timothy B. Lee is the author. He wrote it 7 days ago. The title, Hold Cops Personally Liable for Camera Arrests. Connecticut bill says yes. Let me read this. The Connecticut State Senate passed legislation last week that would hold police officers in the state personally liable for violating a citizen's First Amendment right to videotape their actions. The bill is sponsored by Senator Eric Coleman. Let's hope we get some of our senators. If you're listening, call up your senators. Tell them to look up Eric Coleman in this bill. This is really fascinating. Let me continue. According to The Day, a Connecticut newspaper, Coleman cited the 1991 Rodney King beating as an inspiration for the legislation. The proposal, also prompted by a 2009 incident in which a Catholic priest was arrested by East Haven police while recording officers harassing Latino business owners. A federal investigation resulted in charges being filed against four police officers. Quote, sometimes we become aware of incidents where police officers have been overzealous or abusive and not act in a very complimentary way towards the citizens who deserve to be served and protected, Coleman said. The Connecticut bill, which still must pass the state's House of Representatives, is part of a trend towards increased legal protection for citizens filming police officers in the line of duty. At least one appeals court has recognized that citizens have a First Amendment right to record the actions of on-duty police officers in public places. But police enjoy, quote, qualified immunity, meaning that liability for police misconduct falls on the city, in other words, taxpayers, rather than on individual officers. We call that in finance, we call that moral hazard, people. Learn about it. It's not the taxpayers that should be punished. It should be the individual. Or liable, I guess, is a better word than punished. Senator Coleman's proposal would change that, giving police officers a stronger incentive to respect the constitutional rights of Connecticut citizens. The proposal includes several broad exemptions. Officers are not liable if they have a reasonable belief that their actions are necessary to enforce the law, protect public safety, preserve the integrity of a crime scene, or protect the privacy of crime victims or others. The Senate rejected an amendment that would have added an exception for arresting someone whose actions, quote, inconvenience or alarm a police officer. Well, thank goodness. Critics argue that such broad exemption would render the legislation toothless. Yeah, if you inconvenience somebody, they can arrest you. That's a little ridiculous. This is a good trend. This is the kind of legislation I would like to see a legislator with guts here in this state take up. It's happened before. Brad Galvez, I've had him on the show. The Legal Tender Act took guts. We need more of that. Less pandering. Less establishment bullcrap. More standing up for the constituents. Those people that you pander to when you want to get elected. Actually do something like this for them. This is good. This could be very good in a place like Ogden. Hint, hint. What else is going on? You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Obama touting the anniversary of the supposed capture and death of Osama bin Laden. I mean, I find that a little disingenuous. You guys know me. I am not conspiratorial. I'm really not. I'm not. But that doesn't mean I'm not into conspiracy theory. I'm into conspiracy evidence. And there is evidence of conspiracy. Conspiracy is a crime for a reason, because it happens. And I think it's not prosecuted enough. I think there is clear collusion and insidious goings-on. But I'm not interested in theorizing about it or speculating to people's motives. I hate that. Not interested in that. That always ends up in some stupid racist dumb argument or some collectivist argument. It's just dumb. I'm into conspiracy evidence. And it just seems, I mean, you have to understand when it comes to thinking, learning how to learn. We don't do that in this culture anymore. Public education is just about giving you rote memorization and numbers and facts, but not how to critically think about them. There is no more. Look, the base, the classical liberal, or what is now known as a libertarian, but the classical liberal education, the basis of it, the very basic stuff that they learned for thousands of years, was called the trivium. Grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Nobody studies any of those anymore. You study a little bit of grammar in elementary school. 99% of you couldn't tell me the difference between a subject and an object in a sentence. And that's basic grammar, okay? A gerund. A few of you might remember what a gerund is. I mean, but that should be the base. And then you move on to logic. Off the top of your head, how many know what affirming the consequent or denying the antecedent is? Right, that's my point. Some of you might have wisened up a little bit, maybe heard me talking about ad hominem, not just formal logic, but informal logic. Ad baculum. These are basic, guys. Now, I've been fortunate because I got turned on at a very young age, and I've been studying it for a while. And I think about how I think. And what about rhetoric? Do you know what an enthymeme is? I doubt it. Do you know what a trope is? I'm not doing this. Anybody could learn this. This is not showing off. This is telling you what the equipment you need, guys. You're going to go hiking? You need a bag, you need food, you need a tent, you need warm clothes, you need the right shoes. Well, if you're going to live in an information age, let me give you a hint. You need grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Basic, guys. Learning how to learn. Thinking how to think. And one thing you have to understand, it's not just, it goes beyond deductive reasoning, deductive logic, which is some of this stuff of like denying the antecedent, affirming the consequent, yada, yada, yada. It goes also into inductive reasoning. Who out there knows what inductive reasoning is? The difference between deductive and inductive. Inductive reasoning is very simply statistical reasoning. Watching a broad circumstance happen over and over again, or seeing a large number of things and generalizing into a rule. Induction is where all thought begins. Here's the problem. You could be the most logical deductive thinker, but if your terms, which you arrived at from inductive reasoning, are flawed, your logic can be deductively valid and wrong. I'm sorry if I'm losing some of you guys, but you need to be able to keep up. This is basic. Because the difference between conspiracy theory and conspiracy evidence, in statistics, and I've worked professionally as a statistician, in statistics, we're concerned oftentimes with the differences between a type 1 error and a type 2 error. Again, I'm not mad if you haven't heard these things or upset. I'm just trying to get you to wake up. Hopefully you got a pen and pad and you're writing some of this down so you can look it up on your own. The type 1 error is a false positive. We all know what that is. Think of a pregnancy test. False positive. It says that something is so when it's not really so. And a lot of people get that, but nobody pays attention to false negatives, and that's one of the bigger ones. That's how these conspirators get by. That's when no alarm goes off, and yet something happens. So a false positive would be you pee on the stick and it says you're pregnant and you're not. A false negative is when you pee on the stick and it says you're not pregnant and you are. Which is a bigger deal? The false negative. And notice all the attention's on the false positive. Right? The false negative is going to impact your life more. What about when you are in the woods and there's a rustle in the leaves? You're hoping it's a false positive. You're hoping that you think something's rustling in the leaves, and when you look, there's nothing there. What's worse is when the rustle in the leaves happen, you go, oh, nothing's there, and it's actually a tiger, and you ignored it and it gets you. This is the difference, guys. Pattern recognition. And it's valid. Don't let anybody tell you it's not. These people who pass themselves off as modern skeptics, they're all about type one, about false positives, but none of them pay attention to false negatives. Evidence of proof is not the same as proof of evidence. Or how's that phrase go? Lack of evidence isn't the same as evidence of lack of it not being there. Do you understand? This is what's important, to be able to put the pieces together in a reasonable fashion. Inductive reasoning, coming to a general rule from looking at general patterns, data points. It's how all knowledge starts. And don't let anybody else tell you any different. It's the root of it all. And that's the point of this show. That's why I had Joey Johnson, Brandon Ruiz talking sports, but it's still about learning how to learn. About the mental game. It's crucial. We live in an information age. Look it up. Learn the Trivium. There's a great book out there called The Trivium. It's from the, like 100 years ago. Written by a Catholic nun. And it's the best book out there. The Trivium. Sister Mary Joseph. Check it out. All right, guys, come on back. Mental Self Defense Radio, AM 630, K-Talk, Voice of Utah. Huh.
Hi, I'm John with Competitive Comfort Heating and Air, 801-419-6621. We have an awesome air conditioning offer for you. Because the snow's on the Elkers, get a new air conditioner installed in your home starting at $2,195. We normally offer this unit for $3,000. It includes a $350 clean air package, absolutely free. You'll want to take advantage of us while it's still slow, because at the end of April, we'll be busy and everyone's prices will go up. So call now at 801-419-6621. Why call us instead of the other guy? Well, besides the amazing amount of money you'll save, we believe the customer's always right. I'll not only give you a temperature guarantee, but a 12-month money-back satisfaction guarantee in writing. Go with the guy who saves you money and puts his guarantees in writing, and get a free clean air package. Call me at 801-419-6621. That's 801-419-6621. But you got to call me while the snow's still on the Elkers. Call me at 801-419-6621. That's 801-419-6621.
Tune in on Sundays at 4 p.m. to learn the latest cutting-edge science of health with your hosts Hugo Rodier, MD, and Gary Olson, DC, on the Integrative Health Show, sponsored by Pioneer Comprehensive Medical Clinic in Draper. Our country is suffering from poor health due to nutritional, environmental, and stress problems. Learn how to address these problems and not rely on symptomatic treatments that often have too many side effects. The Integrative Health Show, Sundays at 4 p.m. on KTOC AM 630.
Friends of the Constitution, the founders of our nation expected each state legislature to discuss the bills from Washington that would affect their state. Then the state legislature would give direction to the congressional senators in the vote that would best protect the state's sovereignty. This original process stabilized our senators. When lobbyists and special interests would approach a senator to initiate a switch in their vote, the senator would defend the vote and then say something like, "I will change my vote only if you can persuade the state legislature. Their decision is my decision." So originally, senators did not just vote their own individual opinions, but were actually voting the will of their state in Congress. Let us help stabilize our out-of-control Congress by returning to this method. Download your free copy of Government Based on the Original United States Constitution at k-talk.com. That's k-talk.com.
The voice of Utah, AM 630 K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you, let me jump in your game. Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you, let me jump in your game.
All right, guys, welcome back. Mental Self Defense Radio. I am your host, Jake Shannon. I hope I didn't put you guys all to sleep or put you into a trance with my last little thing about, learning how to learn. But it is important. It really is important. I don't know what else to tell you. A couple other things I wanted to touch on. These are quick news stories. We've got Darcy Van Orden coming up at 2:30. She's going to be asking a very interesting question. Has Occupy Wall Street been infiltrated, co-opted, taken over? Which, this is something I'm thrilled to talk about, because I wrote the book on this with regards to the Tea Party. So this is fascinating stuff. I can't wait to get into this with Darcy here in about 5 minutes. A couple things here I think that are interesting. Ran across this story, activistpost.com. This is actually, I think, in today's, so it shouldn't be hard to find. Activist Post, May 1st, actually, yesterday. Pesticide exposure found to lower intelligence, by Anthony Gucciardi. Pesticides ubiquitous among, not only the food supply, but farms and homes worldwide have been found to be creating lasting changes in overall brain structure. Changes that have been linked to lower intelligence levels and decreased cognitive function. Previously linked in scientific research to the massive obesity crisis, pesticides are now known to impact the mind in ways that are still not entirely understood. Especially if we're getting dumber and dumber because of the pesticides. We may never understand them. Continuing, despite these findings, they are continually touted as safe by the profit-hungry chemical industry. The study, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, observed pregnant mothers in New York who were exposed to a pesticide known as chlorp- pyrophos, CPF, banned in 2001 from household use. The chemical is still used worldwide in agriculture. That's right. This is a chemical that is not permitted to be used in your home, though it is perfectly fine to spray on your food. So I guess it's not fine in your body, but it's fine in your or fine in your house, but it's fine in your body. What the researchers found was that women who had higher levels of CPF had children with, quote, significant abnormalities in brain structure compared to mothers with lower exposure levels. Anyway, found that interesting. Something worthy of looking into. Wall Street Journal. This is pretty awesome because, you know, again, I do have a Master of Science in Financial Engineering, which is essentially financial mathematics, a little software engineering thrown in. But I have my bachelor's from the University of Colorado at Boulder in English. Yes, I know it's strange. It's a weird mix. But that's me. I'm a weird mix across the board. Anyway, in the Wall Street Journal, kind of a thing right up my alley, hoping that you find it interesting, but I do. The new science of the birth and death of words. Have physicists discovered the evolutionary laws of language in Google's library? By Christopher Shea. Again, this is something I find fascinating, not only as an English major, not only as a somebody who's worked professionally as a quantitative analyst and mathematician, statistician, but also as a hypnotist. The new science of the birth and death of words by Christopher Shea. Can physicists produce insights about language that have eluded linguists and English professors? The possibility was put to the test this week when a team of physicists published a paper drawing on Google's massive collection of scanned books. They claim to have identified universal laws governing the birth, life, course, and death of words. I don't know. This is so cool to me. I'm sorry, but this is cool. The paper marks an advance in a new field dubbed culturonomics, or culturomics, the application of data crunching to subjects typically considered part of the humanities. Last year, a group of social scientists and evolutionary theorists put the Google Books team, showed off the kinds of things that could be done with Google's data, which included the content of 5 million plus books dating back to 1800. Published in Science, which is a very reputable scientific journal, that paper gave the best yet estimate of the true number of words in English, 1 million. Far more than any dictionary has recorded. The 2002 Webster's Third New International Dictionary has 348,000. More than half of the language the authors wrote is dark matter that has evaded standard dictionaries. The paper also tracked word usage through time. Each year, for instance, 1% of the world's English-speaking population switches from sneaked to snuck. It has also showed that we seem to be putting history behind us more quickly, judging by the speed with which terms fall out of use. Reference to the year 1880 dropped in half in the 32 years after that date, while the half-life of 1973 was a mere decade. In the new paper, Alexander Peterson, Joel Tenenbaum, and their co-authors looked at the ebb and flow of word uses across various fields. All these different words are battling it out against synonyms, variant spellings, and related words, says Mr. Tenenbaum. It's an inherently competitive evolutionary environment. When the scientists analyzed the data, they found striking patterns not just in English, but also in Spanish and Hebrew. There has been, the authors say, a dramatic shift in the birth rate and death rate of words. Deaths have increased and births have slowed. So maybe Orwell was right. Maybe we're going to end up with this newspeak that's just this dumbed-down language. English continues to grow. The 2011 Culturomics paper suggests a rate of 8,500 new words a year. The new paper, however, said that the growth rate is slowing, partly because the language is already so rich. The marginal utility of new words, that's an economics concept, the additional value of each additional unit, is declining. Existing things are already well described. This led them to a related finding. The words that manage to be born now become more popular than new words used to get, possibly because they describe something genuinely new. Think iPod, Internet, Twitter. Now, have you invented a word that's been picked up in popular usage? I have. I've coined a few. I invented something called the mace bell. If you type it into Google, you'll find it. A mace bell. I came up with that. Nobody else did. I was talking earlier about the difference between type 1 and type 2 errors, there's a term described for people who seem to be plagued by this type 1 error actually came up with by a Nazi psychiatrist. The concept was called apophenia, this propensity towards type 1 errors. Well, there wasn't anything to describe the type 2 errors that I'm so concerned with, so I came up with a term called paraphenia. And so it goes. I've got a bunch more. I won't get into them. I've got a bunch of other terms I've coined. But anyway, this is fascinating stuff for me because words are very powerful. Very, very powerful. The article continues, higher death rates for words, the authors say, are largely a matter of homogenization. The explorer, William Clark, of Lewis and Clark fame, spelled Sioux, you know, like the Native American tribe, 27 different ways in his journals. And several of those variants would have made it into 19th century books. Today, spell-checking programs and vigilant copy editors choke off such chaotic variety much more quickly, in effect speeding up the natural selection of words. Synonyms also fight Darwinian battles. In one chart, the authors document that roentgenogram was by far the most popular term for X-ray for much of the 20th century, but it began a steep decline in the 60s, in 1960, and is now dead. Death in language is not as final as with humans. It refers to extreme rarity. Loan monies died circa 1950, killed off by loans. Persistency today is breathing its last, defeated in the race of survival by persistence. The authors even identified a universal tipping point in the life cycle of new words. Roughly 30 to 40 years after their birth, they either enter the long-term lexicon or tumble off a cliff into disuse. The authors suggest that this may be because that stretch of decades marks the point when dictionary makers approve or disapprove new candidates for inclusion. Or perhaps it's generational turnover. Children accept or reject their parents' coinages. The similar trajectory of word birth and death across time in three languages is striking, though the research is still too new to evaluate fully, says Mark Lieberman, professor of linguistics at the University of Pennsylvania. Among the questions raised by the critics, since older books are harder to scan, how much of the word death is simply the disappearance of the words garbled by the Google process itself? In the end, words and sentences aren't atoms and molecules, even if they can be fodder for some of the same formulas. Fascinating stuff. Okay, without further ado, we've got Darcy here, but I've got this caller. I got to get to him. We are live two-way talk, so I got to get to this guy. Frank wants to talk in Ogden. Also, I want to correct yesterday. We said I was right originally, and Connor corrected me, but I was right originally. Matheson actually voted for CISPA. So the only person to vote against CISPA here in Utah was actually Rob Bishop. So I wanted to make that clarification, but let's get to Frank in Ogden, who's been holding, then we'll get to Darcy. Hey, Frank, are you there?
Yes, I'll be really quick because I love listening to Darcy. It's interesting you talked about the loss of grammar in our English language, how it's the death of words and the grammar and how we don't know a complete sentence anymore. If you go to learn a foreign language and you learn all the words, you learn their vocabulary, you learn their grammar, but as you start to learn that language, what you process, at least for me, is I had to always put the sentence in English and then change it into the language I learned, and then I would speak that sentence. What was very interesting and what I learned quickly was I found out how bad my English grammar was because when I would translate a sentence I made in English into the other language, it didn't come out right, and the native speakers of those other languages realize that obviously your accent gives you away, but also because your sentence structure's not correct, they're looking at you like, you got to work on your language. You really don't know
this
language
at all. Yeah, you know, it's funny, Frank, you intuitively stumbled on something that another research paper in linguistics has recently stumbled on, and that is the fact that people who speak more than one language tend to think clearer. And it's for this exact reason, because you have to.
Yeah, you find yourself going, wait a minute, I can't form the sentence that way because that's not the way I hear it.
Yeah.
Because when I speak to native speakers of a particular language, they give me phrases, and then when I try to translate them back into English, in your head, you're like, wait a minute, that word's in the wrong place.
Yeah, I mean, this
then
is the thing that's so funny,
right? Language
that's the thing that's so funny is all these xenophobes, and they're like, oh, English only and blah, blah, blah. That's just going to make them dumber and easier to take over and manipulate. I don't know. It's an uphill battle, but we do what we can.
Yes, it is.
All right, Frank, I appreciate the call, buddy. All right, thanks for calling in. Let's get to Darcy. Let me see if I can get that button going here. Darcy, are you there?
How's it going?
It's going good. You're touching on a subject that I am fascinated with, taking a new spin on it. So lay it on us. So is Occupy Wall Street being co-opted?
Yeah, I guess I have a lot of questions regarding the Occupy Wall Street movement. I think it's been interesting to watch. I think a lot of people have made some comparisons to the Tea Party, but of course there are major differences in the fact that the Tea Party is asking for less government, and it seems in a lot of ways you've got the Occupy Wall Street where they're begging for more government intervention. But I would say, you know, there are similarities from both being a protest movement. However, I think in a lot of ways the Occupy Wall Street movement's been muddied with a lot of violence and a lot of things that, you know, has not at all been associated with the Tea Party. Tea Party's been rather a very quiet, peaceful movement, but it leads me to a lot of questions. All of a sudden, kind of, it seemed like they had died off, you know, pretty strongly as the winter months move forward. I think their strategy to camp out, as far as I was concerned, I didn't see how it was going to last through winter, and of course it did not. But all of a sudden you have this whole May Day, you know, let's get the people out, you know.
Yeah, there's like a resurgence all of a sudden with spring or something.
Exactly. So you have this resurgence, which, I mean, I do see how, you know, in the warmer temperatures, you know, people would be willing to come back out and protest. Ultimately, their whole tagline being, you know, we are the 99%, and I think in a lot of ways, you know, their whole goal is to, you know, wage kind of this war against the 1% that they feel, you know, controls everything going on. But I feel like I will have a lot of suspicions, as I know you do also, Jake, as to has the government in a lot of ways co-opted this movement for their own benefit.
I mean, that's what you see, right? Like, I saw this, obviously, in the Tea Party. I saw the GOP, the establishment GOP, not the Ron Paul wing, the establishment
correct.
Socialist Medicare party of dropping bombs on innocent babies and stuff. That, I saw them trying to bring back, via Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin, bring them the Tea Party back in the fold. And I'm with you. I'm totally suspicious of Occupy Wall Street. I do think, just like in the Tea Party, there's plenty of sincere people. I think there's a lot of sincere, good people, and same
totally.
With Occupy. I think it's a different demographic, right? I think that some of the reason maybe why there's that violence is that it's a younger demographic. First of all, most of the people at the Tea Party are older people. You know,
sure.
That's what I noticed. And the Occupy, they tend to be kind of younger and maybe have a little more energy, a little less foresight when it comes to some of their actions. But there's so many sincere people, and there are big problems with big corporations. I'm with that. But,
yeah
I do see guys like Eric Holder and Van Jones and all these people trying to use Occupy Wall Street to meet their political ends.
Well, exactly. And so that's really the question is that's lingering, because I think a lot of legislation has been passed now recently in concert with the surges of the Occupy Wall Street, one of them being the legislation to limit our freedom of speech on federal grounds and make it so if there's an elected official whom has a Secret Service detail, wherever they might be, it makes it illegal for you to protest, you know, wherever they are. So if they're staying in a hotel, you couldn't even protest in front of that hotel. And then, of course, it includes the federal buildings such as the White House, which I think is so insane that you can no longer protest in front of the White House.
Well, and we were talking yesterday online about these provocateurs.
Absolutely.
Which is exactly this point. But they don't. It's not taking over the movement to use it in like how the Tea Party happened. What happens is the government establishment dresses up a bunch of their goons like anarchists or these protesters and then actually incite the riots. And then they enact. Is this kind of where you're going with this? That they enact these?
Exactly. That's my fear, is that because I know members of Occupy Wall Street. I have good friends who are involved with the movement. I fully respect them as activists.
Yeah, I remember actually being down there. Like, I was down there checking things out. You were down there. This is like
correct.
In the fall when it was still kind of just new.
Exactly. So I've checked it out. I spoke to those people. Then I also have, you know, close personal friends that I grew up with that are active in this movement outside of Utah and California.
Now hold on just a sec, Darcy. This is a really hot topic. I want to get back to it. We got the commercial. Got to keep the lights on here. Come on back. We're talking about, has Occupy Wall Street been co-opted? We're in the middle of the Van Orden Report, Darcy Report, right now. Mental Self Defense Radio, K-Talk, come on back.
If you have been diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea and are wearing a CPAP mask, are you among the 75% of CPAP users who cannot tolerate it? Does it make you feel strapped down, interrupt your sleep, causing tooth-related problems? Does it make you feel claustrophobic and you unconsciously remove it during the night? Call Dr. Miles Preble for a comfortable alternate treatment at 801-278-4787. That's 801-278-4787. Or online at smileutah.com.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Sir Galahad, what seems to be the problem?
Ever since he rescued me from the dragon, we've been drifting apart.
Well, this isn't a fairy tale.
Mr. Sir Galahad, maybe if you started by just holding Mrs. Sir Galahad's hand.
Really?
Yeah, try it. Careful, little oil.
Marriage, you're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
Meet Jerry D.
Hi.
Jerry and his family, like you, are very concerned about world conditions and have gathered many emergency preparedness items, including Turtle Tough shelters.
We have added 2 24-foot Turtle Toughs to our supplies and feel very secure knowing our large family is ready for whatever the future may bring.
Turtle Tough shelters are not tents. They are permanent yet portable four-season geodesic frame shelters that are as strong as a cabin at a fraction of the cost and are easy to set up, take down, and move anywhere. Available in two sizes. Get your Turtle Tough shelter and accessories included at TurtleToughShelters.com. That's Turtle, T-U-F-F, Shelters.com. Or call 801-623-3288. That's 801-623-3288. Or see them online at TurtleToughShelters.com. Turtle Tough Shelters, your all-season home away from home.
The Voice of Utah, AM 630, K-Talk.
K-Talk.com.
Number one for the most live, local, two-way talk.
You say goodbye, and I say hello.
Welcome back, Mental Self Defense Radio. I am Jake Shannon. We are in the middle of the Darcy Report. We got Darcy Van Orden. Are you there, Darcy?
I am. How are you?
I'm doing good. So you brought up this point about is Occupy being a is it being co-opted? And I think it's interesting because, you know, I cover the perspective of like the Tea Party, how it was kind of manipulated from within to be brought back in the fold, but instead you're taking maybe a different approach. That is the Occupy Wall Street movement being manipulated by the establishment to maybe pass more draconian laws so that we can't peacefully protest? I mean, that's kind of where you're going. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's my concern, is that as I've observed, I've watched a lot of media reporting in regards to Occupy. I've seen all kinds of YouTube videos where they've covered areas that have been considered very quote-unquote violent areas in regards to Occupy, like the Sacramento, California area and some other places. Now, I've watched video where I've actually watched a police officer break the window of a car, and then, in essence, that would be used to claim all the violence and all the vandalism,
right,
and ultimately
and this is what we were talking about yesterday, agent provocateurs.
Correct.
We've busted them. We've got footage of them. It's not just Occupy Wall Street. But it's kind of the same crowd. It seems like depending on the crowd, they change their tactics. And so when you have these kind of younger, more lefty groups, they send these anarchists to do the riots and whatnot, right? Like, and you know why that might be? Now that we're kind of thinking about this, right? How many people in Occupy Wall Street are going to have a concealed carry versus people in the Tea Party, right?
Exactly right.
That violence ain't going to happen when everybody's got a concealed carry.
You're exactly right, and so I'm pointing to a lot of instances where, and then in addition to that, the response to them has been so, you know, militant from the police. You know, where you've had peaceful assemblies. I know at the university, I believe it was one in North Carolina, you literally had the students simply assembling. They were there seated. They were quiet. They were, you know, they were just there peacefully, and yet you had police officers go up and down the line and spray them all with pepper spray. You know, we've watched a very militant response to them, and cases where there hasn't been any kind of threat of violence exerted. So you really had no, you know, imminent danger or threat to the police that would merit such a strong response. And then as of late, you know, you have you know, discussions about there was this, what, bomb threat in Cleveland yesterday area in Ohio. So I feel like in a lot of ways, I think the government wants to use them as a scapegoat, as an excuse to say, oh, this movement, they are so violent, they were so dangerous, you know, citizens are being threatened under the scenario. We must respond with these laws. We must respond with these measures to combat what they're doing. And even more than anything, I think that because, you know, Congress is so unpopular, so are, you know, just government in general, everybody's so frustrated, the economy is down, you know, literally they realize how, you know, unpopular, you know, our members of government are. I feel like they need to create a scapegoat and a threat, and I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, Occupy has become the ultimate scapegoat to threaten people with, to say, these people are too dangerous, we must take the proper measures. You know, these are potential terrorists in our society, and this is what we need to do to combat these people and create this existential threat, because too many eyes have been critically on government, critically on the police, critically on our elected officials, that they need this other threat.
Yeah, it seems to play very well into kind of the establishment, their playbook as well, right? Because what we've noticed, for example, with kind of the liberty activists and Ron Paul and these and kind of this uprising of libertarians, is that this stuff works. These public protests work. And if they could come up with an excuse, boom, all done. Back to status quo tyranny.
Exactly. And so they really have to demonize this movement so greatly in order to keep people from buying in and coming on board, because for them, it's so dangerous to see, you know, every day more and more people are getting involved, and they have to squash it as soon as possible, because ultimately, if you get a good percentage of the citizens on board, they know that the citizens are, in fact, in the way it should be. The citizens should be, it's we the people. We are the government. We are the ones who give them power, and they need our consent. And, you know, the only way of, you know, that's going to get out of whack is if they allow this to continue unchecked. And so I'm very suspicious of, you know, the threats. I will, of course, there are people committing acts of violence. I wouldn't say that that's not existing. But the question is are those people who are doing that, you know, have they been hired in some perspective to do that, to infiltrate, to make it seem something that it's not? And, you know, because I've definitely heard about, you know, people who have, you know, tried to infiltrate the Tea Party. They've been, you know, kind of dress up, try to assume to be part of that, and then they want to just kind of act out to kind of give the Tea Party a black eye. I don't think overall if that's happened, it's been so minimal. There hasn't been done with any success. I think the success of the Tea Party is that they kept their message very clear. It was very much about, we're taxed enough already, we need to limit government, we need to get the spending in check. I think some of the failures of the Occupy has been that they haven't been able to zero in and hone a message. They're far too unorganized. I mean, of course, I think the Tea Party is disorganized because it is a movement of people, but I think you have more of that problem in the area of Occupy, because I think that they're heading in far too many directions. They're trying to tackle too many things. They're bringing too many things up. And truthfully, that has been to their detriment, because too many people are running around scratching their heads. What do these people want? What are they trying to do? You know, why, you know, they're just kind of very curious, left in the dark of, you know, what they're trying to accomplish overall. And they haven't even been able to convey that message very well. And I think the result of that is just creating more chaos.
Yeah, and the sad thing is this is what is kind of more tragic to me about, like, I feel I'm more justified in being pissed off at the Tea Party, because they're grown adults. A lot of these Occupy people, they're just kids, and they're mad, and in some ways they're right to be mad, I think. You know, I look at things like these private prisons and some of the incentives that are created there. I look at some of, like, how Big Pharma is, like, drugging kids, and
totally.
I can get it. I can get the anger and the rage. And for me, my particular brand of libertarianism is not just anti-government. I'm against any concentration of power that puts a group of individuals over one individual against their rights, you know, individualism. That's where I stand. And so corporations are just as bad as government, and especially in the sense where they're colluding and they're like giving each other quid pro quo. So I understand it, but these kids, they seem much more easily manipulated and used by the establishment.
Well, exactly. I feel like anybody who can almost, you know, speak in a complete sentence can kind of, you know, stand in the middle of that crowd and in a loud speaker. They could say just about anything. If they do it in a fair, authoritarian, concise voice, then they would probably all cheer for it. So, you know, that's I think that's part of, you know, some of the problem is, yeah, it's a lot of young people who are, you know, less experienced, and, you know, they are angry, and some of them just don't even know why they're angry. They're just angry. They think that there's something wrong. They haven't educated themselves enough to articulate something of substance, and I think that goes back to the fact that, you know, if they were further educated, I think that they could refocus their energies on the root of the problem, as opposed to, it seems like they're just going after and they're attacking every tree limb they can see that sprout, you know, fruit they dislike. And so, you know, that becomes more the problem. I think if we could actually unite with them from a more liberty standpoint, if they hone their message to being, you know, anti-Federal Reserve, I mean, that's really the root of the problem that's created so much of the suffering that we have in this country as well as around the world.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve, or be against the tax system, kind of. And there's so many people, I think, that could get turned on to maybe Henry David Thoreau, right? Who is very much a lefty in kind of the vibe, the feel, the rhetoric of civil disobedience and whatnot. But Gandhi, MLK, all these heroes of the left, and rightfully so, these are courageous individuals. They took their inspiration from Thoreau, who wrote Civil Disobedience in a tax protest.
Absolutely.
Which is very Tea Party, ironically enough.
Absolutely. And so I definitely think that there are some things that they're going after where I could definitely, you know, I definitely agree with them. I can unite with them on, I'm anti-corporatism. I don't like the fact that, you know, basically corporations get in bed, they buy our Congress, and they have all the influence that they want. And the results of that, as we look around, Monsanto is one of the vice presidents of Monsanto is now the head of the FDA.
Oh.
I mean, it's just there's corruption after corruption after corruption. I think in a lot of ways, you know, Wall Street, more or less, it's like Congress has created the corrupt system by which everybody has to play along. And so in a lot of ways, blaming Wall Street's kind of like, well, let's get to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is, you know, our Congress, you know, they're corrupt individuals. They're selling their votes. They're selling their influence. You know, that has the greater problem there, and, of course, the Federal Reserve. If we could hone their message there, we could unite both the right and the left and accomplish a great deal. But the problem is that, you know, they're operating on a lot of misinformation, and they don't support, you know, the free market. And they basically, as a result, they blame capitalism. And to me, all of that energy, if they only understood how the free market has lifted more people out of poverty than anything else in the world, you know, then they would be a little more educated. They wouldn't be going around blaming capitalism for all that fails in the world. What's failed us is the fact that we've gone completely away from the free market. We've enacted so many barriers to entry, you know, so many regulations, you know, so many things out there to keep a free market from existing. Because if they understood, competition is good. Competition drives prices down. More people can afford, you know, all the things that everybody enjoys, all the spoils in the world. Everybody can enjoy, you know, great technology and education as a result of a free market and competition.
Yeah, for me, I think that so much of the difference, say, between like a Tea Party and an Occupy Wall Street, which aren't kind of purely libertarian or purely anything, really. They're kind of this hodgepodge, but there's a vibe, this kind of dissident vibe to both parties. But I think a lot of the biggest differences, again, come to something that I've been talking about this whole program, and that's words, right? Because if I take the rhetoric and explain to them about voluntarism,
mm-hmm.
they're totally into it. They're like, yeah, that's awesome. But I mean free market. It's like if I'm going to talk to a Tea Party group, I'll use the term free market because that means a certain thing. That means voluntary exchange. That means, you know, industry and all that kind of stuff. Well, voluntarism means the same thing to a lot of these folks. But it's just the language that's keeping us apart, I think. Because can you imagine this? If we just got all the differences apart and focused on where the Venn diagrams overlap between the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street, the sincere parts of it, not the corporate or the government parts, but the sincere parts where they are just mad and want to change things.
Correct.
We could change the United States in a second, because there's a ton of people mad. I think there's a certain interest by the establishment to really drive this wedge, this Machiavellian divide and conquer kind of thing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think too much of what they've done is put this focus on making it about, you know, let's kind of go after the rich. They are the root of the problem, and that's their message, and that's wrong. I mean, you're only getting your jobs from people who've been successful and been able to start businesses. So if we can help them understand the positives of the market, the positives of competition, how it's helped the poor, how it's driven prices down, so, you know, your average person can afford so much more because of a free market here in the United States, where their quality of life and living is so much higher than other countries where the average person here, you know, lives like somebody who's wealthy in another country.
And yeah, so I mean, even our homeless people live better than kings just like 500 years ago.
Well, exactly. And so people can understand how it's actually, you know, elevated the quality of life has resulted from embracing a free market and competition is good, you know, and not having, you know, it's government that creates these bubbles, it's government that creates these monopolies, because basically they want to pick the winners and losers. And so if only we could educate the people enough in the Occupy movement to understand the positives that, you know, capitalism is your friend, capitalism is a good thing, it's been good for the poor, it's been good for the 99%, we could unite on so much more, and then the result of that would be success in changing our government in a positive direction and going after the real problems, which are the Federal Reserve, corporatism, and our terrible tax system.
Yeah, I love it, Darcy. Great, great report. Hey, guys, every Wednesday, the Darcy Report right here, Mental Self Defense Radio. I will be back next week. More great stuff, more opportunity to...